Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Adam Elliott and I'm joined today, as ever, huge surprise guys, it's Martin Riley. Martin, how are you doing, bud?
I'm doing great, thank you. I've actually eaten tonight, which is a change for recent pods that we've had. I've had a McDonald's. So yeah, that was good. Had the McSpicy with the Frank's hot sauce, which is very nice, and also some halloumi fries to go with that as well. So I've had a really, really good tea. I enjoyed it. How are you?
Super healthy. Yeah, I'm great. I've had a really productive day today. I was actually messaging you to make sure that you had your tea before we recorded. I was like trying to push this back, and Martin was like, no, let's get this done. I was like, okay, I'll do it. So I'm feeling extremely prepared. No, I'm fine. To talk about Sunderland, and I myself had a pizza just as I was watching a little bit of some Sunderland Blackburn, which was a great watch. I have to admit, really made me feel a lot better about our chances. And yeah, I'm great. So thank you very much for asking. I think we may as well let our listeners know that just due to the really hectic schedule as it currently is, we're actually recording this before we play Coventry City this weekend. So you guys will know the result, and you'll probably have even heard the review of that game. And if you haven't, I would urge you to go and listen to it now if it's not already out. But it makes things a bit more difficult to discuss a tiny bit, but I'm sure we'll be fine. And we're here today actually talk about Sunderland, who we play on what day is it, Martin? Is it Tuesday or Wednesday kickoff? I cannot remember for the life of me.
Tuesday.
So Saturday and Tuesday. Great. Who we play? Yes, that's it. On Tuesday. No opposition interview, though, this week, unfortunately, and that is a sad, sad thing. But I'm sure we'll have at least one or two more on before the end of the season. You'll just have to settle for us two numpties for now. But we'll dive straight in, Martin. How's the season been for Sunderland so far? Last season, they finished sixth, I think it was, and they got into the playoffs, snuck in, played Luton, who were the eventual winners, and went out. And it looked like a season of building. They've got a really young side. But how's it actually gone this year? Go on.
Well, it's gone a bit all wrong, really, for them. They've made some bad choices, I think, in the managerial section. They've gone for, I think, are they on their third manager of the season now, I think?
Indeed. Well, kind of. Permanent and now this caretaker, but yes.
Yeah, so they made the decision to sack. Who's their original manager now?
So they had Tony Mowbray, who was doing a fantastic job. Someone who's really well liked in the effort, I think, by a lot of people. Very well respected, and was doing a pretty good job with a lot of young players. And then they got Michael Beale, who had recently been sacked by Rangers. He didn't last very long, I think he lasted 12 games, and then he got sacked. So that means he got sacked twice in the space of, I think it was like 4 or 5 months, which is pretty funny. And then they put Mike Dodds back in charge, who is currently the one taking the reins until the end of the season, and they're going to have a think about it and make an appointment this summer. There's plenty of names doing the rounds, including Paul Heckingbottom and a few others. Will Still, who people on Twitter will know exactly who that is because of all the memes. He's been linked quite a lot as well, so there's a few options for them. But yes, Mike Dodds, who is the caretaker, and he did actually beat Leeds United earlier this season, didn't he?
Yes, he did. That was the last game that we played against them, and they had a pretty successful game plan, you have to say, in that fixture. It's not been a great season for Sunderland. So I bet their fans are quite disappointed. They've been quite hopeful of getting into a similar position that they did last year and maybe getting into the playoffs, but it just has not gone that way for them at all. So now they're left in a position where they don't really have anything to play for. They're not at risk of relegation, and they're also not anywhere near the playoffs either. So, yep, it's just one of those things for them. They're on beachy at the moment.
Beachy, yes, indeed. Very, very beachy. Just on Beale for a second, I think it was one of those big mistake appointments where you sack a manager that's quite popular. They had actually had a bit of a downturn in form, but the underlying numbers at that time were pretty decent. Sacked him, even though they were putting up decent numbers, as I say, and replaced him with Beale, who was not a popular choice at all at the start. So that didn't get things off to a good start at all. And then various things went on, not just the defeats, but stuff like the ignoring of one of their defenders, Trey Hume, when he got substituted and things like that. It just sort of spiraled into a really bad situation. So not been the best for them. Definitely a weird season for them, but they still have a really, really young squad, youngest in the league. So there are still some components to them that are pretty promising going forward if they get this summer right. But we're talking about the present, and as you say, it's really been poor recently. So talk to me a little bit about some of the results that they've been putting up under Mike Dodds so far. I think he's taken charge of about 7 or 8 games now.
So yeah, the last 10 games overall, they've had 3, 6, 7 losses. So that's quite bad form under in the moment. But 2 wins, the most recent one was against Cardiff. And then the other one before that was quite a while ago, against Plymouth, 10 games ago.
So yeah, that was when Beale was still in charge.
Yeah, yeah, so they've had pretty bad fixtures, pretty bad results recently. Most recently culminating in a 5-1 loss against Blackburn, and Blackburn are not anything special. So yeah, that was a very fun match to watch, and then not long before that, I had a game against Southampton in which they lost 4-2. And Southampton put up a lot of XG in that, 3.2 XG. We were just talking about that before we started recording. They'd lost against Leicester 1-0, Norwich 1-0, Swansea 2-1, Birmingham 2-1, Huddersfield 1-0. And in most of these fixtures, they were the team who deserved to lose per the XG numbers, at least. We haven't obviously watched everything we won in the last 10 games, but not very, very great looking at the moment. Seemed like they are getting the results that they deserve and not getting very many points in the process.
What do you mean we haven't watched all of these games? Of course we have. That's Bielsa work rate that, you know, he instilled into the team and it rubbed off on us. Of course it did. What are you on about? No, we haven't watched all of those, but we have watched a few of them. So, Martin, you have watched a bit of Sunderland recently. So how are they setting up currently in possession?
Well, most of the season they've set up in a 4-2-3-1, sometimes 4-1-4-1, but it looks quite similar, really, the way they set up. They've got pullbacks on both sides who they do like to get forward. They have one of our ex-players, Leo Hjelde, who's been appearing quite often for them. They like to get their fullbacks up and involved further up the field. They like to get the ball quickly forward to their wide players, and obviously they have one of the best in the division in Jack Clark. So that they do like to get their wide players involved as quickly as they can. They do like to build up from the back, so that they do have some good ball playing centre-back for the division. So they can play out from back when they need to, but they are, I think, more focused towards getting the ball directly forward to the wide players and getting them in action. But they can set up to possess the ball more if they have to. If they're against a team who is going to sit in, then they will look to try to pin the opponent in and not let them get out. But yeah, when they've got the best players available, they are a very dangerous squad. But unfortunately for them, Jack Clark has been injured for a while. But unfortunately for us, he's not injured anymore. Yeah, that's bad times for us. He made an appearance off the bench against Blackburn, and he should be available for the game tomorrow at the time of recording. So if he features in that off the bench as well, that'd be leaving wide open for his first return starting against us. So yeah, that's nice of him, really. Really, really kind. But yeah,
he's been out for a while, hasn't he? I think it's like 7 or 8 fixtures he's missed, and he's timed it perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. But they are a good side who can play good football, and on their day can beat any side in this division. Obviously, they've gone through a lot of hectic time this season with manager upheaval and things going on behind the scenes. So that doesn't always translate to a good result on the pitch, as Leeds fans are aware. We've had those turbulent times in the background. It doesn't always mesh well on the field. So, yeah, it's a tough time at the moment, but we still should be cautious playing against them, because they can play some really good football when they need to.
Yes, I completely agree and concur with that. They are very much a bit of a vibes and in the moment team, but on their day they are quite good, and as you say, there are a few interesting things that they do with the ball this season. I think particularly in the first half of the season under Mowbray, there was quite a lot of good things going on around the midfield area. I quite like a few of the guys there. We'll come on to those later, but just in terms of how they were building up the ball, they were doing a pretty decent job. Dan Neil and Pierre Ekwa Elimbi, who has a wonderful name, he's a pretty tidy footballer on the ball as well. So those guys were, you know, they'd be good at distributing. Few of their defenders are pretty good in that regard as well, albeit quite young. They've got a very young back line for the most part. And then, as you mentioned, the sort of in possession stuff as well. One of the big things in their game is counter attacking. So, yeah, and Clark has timed it perfectly to come back and be their most effective transitional threat. So that's fantastic, isn't it, Martin? But anyway, let's talk a little bit more about how they set up out of possession. And I want you to talk a little bit to me about what they might have done in the reverse fixture as well here, if you can, because they were pretty good at making that game difficult. And it was under the current manager that they've got now, because he was in interim charge between Mowbray being sacked and Beale being appointed. So we have had a bit of a taste for what we might see at Elland Road, perhaps.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. So generally, they are a team who can definitely press high when they come against opponents who they feel they can dominate. And they do try to do that quite often. The game I watched against Blackburn, they were trying to press quite high. It didn't really end that well for them in that game, but they are definitely a team who has the players who can press when they need to. But if you'll remember in the reverse fixture, that wasn't the case. They did sit back, and they also changed their formation. That game against us was the first time they played with a back three shape, and it was quite effective for them. And that was around about the time where we had a few teams who were switching to a back three against us, and only against us. So yeah, that was fun. And then most recently, they've also done similar against Leicester when they played them at the beginning of March. They also set up with a back three shape as well. So that is probably what I would expect to see, something similar to the previous fixture. But they have definitely got the capability to press high. So they could see some of the recent fixtures where we've been against Watford and Hull, and they've both pressed us and we haven't coped very well with it. So there is a chance of that. But I do think it's pretty slim, considering how effective their previous setup was against us in the reverse fixture, that they'll probably look to do something similar. They'll put back three shape with a bank of four in the middle and then three attackers up front. So I'm looking at something like a 3-4-3 is what I expect it to look like. And they'll make things difficult for us, make it physical, and try to hit us in the counter-attack is what I expect them to approach this game against us.
Yes. Yeah, if I cast my mind back to some of the things we said actually in the first preview, we talked about their intensity and their pressing, but how it could be a little bit disjointed, or perhaps a bit naive from some of their players, especially some of the younger players, maybe stepping out when they don't need to and being aggressive when they don't need to. And that lack of experience really showed. And there were decent gaps in between sort of the back line and the midfield area for exploitation in terms of space. And we talked about all of that. And then actually, when we played them, they actually pressed really, really well all game, and they didn't really do any of that. And it might well have been because of that switch in shape, as you just mentioned, the 3-4-3, and it did work really well for them. I think they've got a lot of good players for that system. I think Hjelde would be good at left centre-back, for example, if they chose to use him there, although I think they have actually used him as a left wing-back when they've chosen to use this system, yes. Strangely. But they do have a lot of sort of good blend of sort of physicality, speed, athleticism, in most areas, actually, I would say. And that youthful exuberance will also help with that, in my opinion, despite what I said about maybe lacking some experience, some naivety. That kind of plays into a part of it as well. But yeah, it can be a bit of an interesting one. I do think that kind of maybe explains why they've had a bit of variety in some of their results recently. I watched a bit of Blackburn, and they definitely weren't joined up in that game. But yeah, hopefully it's something they get wrong at Elland Road, but remains to be seen. yeah, you've talked a little bit about the shape and you think it's going to be 3-4-3. I think I do agree with you completely. It would be a surprise if they didn't do that. But are we expecting more of a sort of mid block or a deeper block here? Are you expecting them to go more aggressive or what?
I think it will be maybe not an aggressive mid block, but there will have the theme and in like that who will be putting pressure on. I don't expect them to, yeah, so it's not, won't go with a full deep block where the sit them really, really low, because that won't effectively help them counter attack. So they'll want to hit some sort of middle block and try to win the ball off us when we're trying to transition into their half, so then quickly get those dangerous white players forward and in space. So they won't want to go too deep, and they also won't want to go too aggressive either. So be something of a middle of the road press I get from them, I would expect to see. But there is a small chance that they do decide to go a bit more aggressive, considering our recent bad results against teams who have pressed us.
Lovely. I'm not going to add too much there. I think you're right. So yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit more about individual players and stuff like that now. So what do you think the level of the squad is right now overall? So what I mean by that is, yes, there's quite a lot of young players, but I'm assuming some of them really do stick out from a technical level. I know they do for me, but I'll let you go first on this before I just say first in my best Sunderland voice, Jack Fulton Clark, man. Ahoy! He's brilliant. So go and talk to me about Jack Clark before I, you know, get too aroused.
Yeah, so obviously Leeds fans are all aware of what Jack Black. Yes,
Kung Fu Panda Black. Jack Black.
Indeed. Don't know where that came from. But yes, Jack Clark is a player who we all know. And his style hasn't really changed much from when he was with us, really. He's just got a lot better doing what he was good at with us. He's most threatening when he's dribbling one-on-one. He likes to get wide and then come in field from wide areas, dribble at his fullback and get into the box and cause chaos. He likes to shoot from distance, and he's very good at that as well. Scored quite a few screamers, finishing above his XG this season and last season's as it stands. So yeah, he's a very dangerous player, and he's definitely the one that you have to look out for in Sunderland's side. But he's not the only one. On the other wing, they've got Patrick Roberts, who is also a dangerous player in his own right. He's not quite as explosive as what Jack Clark is in his individual dribbling, but he's very, very technically sound. He's a very good crosser of the ball as well. So he's one who we have to pay attention to. So both sides, whichever fullbacks we put out, will have the handful with one of those two. If Robert does play, because there is other players that could play, like Mundell. He's another player who played in the interim when Clark was injured. But I probably would expect it to be Clark and Roberts who play. And then the other guy who is kind of sometimes been playing as an attacking midfielder, sometimes as a centre forward, is Job Bellingham, who is also a very good player. He's probably at his best.
Who's that?
Job Bellingham, yes, the younger brother of Jude.
Oh, they didn't loan in Jude from Real Madrid, because that was really scary for a moment.
Job Bellingham, yes.
No, he scored against us, so I do remember. He's got to be in the other fixture. Yes.
But yeah, he's probably at his best when he's a box-to-box player who can carry the ball very, very well. He's good defensively as well. He's very good in the press at snapping in quickly and causing problems for defensive midfielders. But his box crashing is probably the biggest thing about his game. It's quite similar. You could well be talking about Jude, to be honest, because their styles are very, very similar. They both got
that's not why I laughed. I don't know if my mic bullet picked up the fact that I laughed there, but I did laugh for any listeners that missed it. I laughed because as you were talking then, I thought I might as well write down box crasher into my notes, and then literally about 2 seconds after I wrote it, you said, his box scratching is really good. So carry on, but that was a good moment. It's like you read my mind.
Yeah, well, it's a big part of his game, which always stands out to me whenever I watch him play. He's a very good player, and he will be moving up to bigger teams, I think, if Sunderland don't progress further and get to the Premier League where they need to be. And then going into deeper areas, they've got good ball playing centre-backs. We've got Daniel Ballard and Luke O'Nine. Both of them are good ball playing centre-backs. And another player who interested me is Trey Hume. He's putting up a lot of impressive numbers in the division this year. Especially for defensive numbers, he puts up a lot of tackles, a lot more than what his other counterparts do. So, and he also likes to get forward quite a lot as well and cause problems. But he's probably not the most technically sound player, but he's got a lot of athleticism to his game. So that's one thing we've got to watch out for, because he will like to get forward on that side along with Roberts. So yeah, but he can also play on both sides as well. So it could be on the side you see him play. And the player you mentioned earlier, Akwaa Limbe, is also a fantastic footballer. He's very good. I really like him. He isn't perfect. He can sometimes get a bit too ambitious with the ball. And I think in the game against Blackburn, I did see some of that. And one of Blackburn's goals came from him basically giving the ball away in possession. He got locked from close range when he was trying to play the ball and loads of space behind him because he got too far forward. So yeah, although he's a very good player, I think that is definitely something a weakness of them. We can press him. But overall, the level of their squad is very good. I think probably the main issue is defensively. I wouldn't say they've got the best box defenders, and they haven't got the most athleticism in their defenders in centre-back positions. So that's something that we can definitely expose, in my opinion.
Oh, nice. Yes. I'll still add to this, but you've done a brilliant job there. So yeah, Trey Hume's a funny one. He's a Northern Ireland international, which means two of their best players right now are under 23s right backs, which is, you know, a great problem to have, guys. Well done. You produced two at the same time. That's not ideal. And then, yeah, so that's an interesting one. I know there's a few Northern Irish listeners, so I wanted to give them a shout out there. But yeah, Roberts is one that's very interesting at the moment because he's definitely been blowing very, very cold lately. He is someone that you and I both like, but he's been poor for a while. I've seen quite a bit of Sunderland unrest about him in the fan base. I think some of them think he looks a bit disinterested. I never really buy into that stuff, but he has been linked away from the club for a while now. He's with Southampton in the summer, so there's perhaps a reason for him down in tools a little bit as well, but I don't really buy into that, like I say. You didn't mention Dan Neil, who's someone I really, really like. One of the better young English midfielders in the Championship, in my opinion, at least at turning out of pressure, and also he's got plenty of energy, will get forward. He's been more of a box-to-box player this season, but he can play as kind of a double pivot if you want him to, alongside Akwaa Limbe, who is just absolutely a phenomenal footballer in terms of just raw attributes. He just needs to be a bit more refined in a lot of ways. He needs to develop in terms of that decision-making that you mentioned and some game sense and when to be aggressive in terms of both with the ball and even without the ball. And if he can do that, he's going to be top player because he's so ridiculous physically, athletically, and technically. He looks really, really sound. I like Dan Ballard a lot. I think he's a really promising player, decent on the ball. I think the problem with someone like 09, he is kind of more of a midfielder throughout his career, and he's been playing as a defensive player for Sunderland in the last few years. But he's comfortable with the ball, and he's got plenty of energy and plenty of sort of, I guess, intangibles. He's the captain of the club, I think, for the most part, or he's the vice captain. He ends up captaining a lot, and is one of the sort of key components in that sense. But yeah, he's not the most athletic, not the most physical. So he's definitely someone to look out for in a sort of negative sense for them. And then, yeah, I guess I should give Clark a big shout out. He has really, really just come on leaps and bounds. He's refined his game. He, like you say, drops deep for those transitions and drives up the pitch. And they're not a one-man team, but he is definitely their best player, their key player. And it's crazy, isn't it, that footballers can leave Leeds United and get even better. Who would have thought it? Like, Clark is one, young age, leaves the club, ends up actually better after a couple of difficult years before that. A few loans that didn't really work out at QPR and Stoke and things like that. Other players like Matt Grimes ended up going back to Swansea, dropping down to the Championship when they got relegated, done really well, and it is possible for players to do that. Really interesting to see that can happen, Martin. Can you hear that I'm being sarcastic? Hope you can. Anyway, Patterson in goal is the only other player I will give a shout out to. I think he's a really, really good goalkeeper in terms of the fundamentals. He's a good shot stopper. He's decent at commanding his box and cross-claiming and all of that. Just a little bit weak with his feet, and I think if he was a bit better, he'd be talking about a Premier League goalkeeper in the near future. He's definitely, in my opinion, one of the best shot stoppers in the division, even if I don't know what the data says, and you don't have to tell me, but I'd imagine it doesn't look too pretty recently, but I don't think that's all down to him. I think he's probably been facing more shots in the second half of the season than he was in the first. So yeah, quite a lot of good players, and the thing is, basically all of the guys we've been talking about there are sort of 26 and under, most of them younger than that, sort of 24 and under, so really, really young team, and if they get things right in the next few years, it would not be surprising to see them sort of jump through into the Premier League pretty quickly. I think that the model that they're trying to go down the route of is kind of Brentford and Brighton vibes, and that probably will mean selling a key player this summer, which I would imagine is almost certain to be Jack Clark. And if we didn't have Chris Sensi at Somerville, he'd be really high on my shopping list, but we do. So he'll end up at another Premier League team, in my opinion. Is that just about it, or is there anyone else that we need to discuss in terms of any weaknesses? You mentioned a bit of a lack of athleticism potentially in the back line. Yeah, I'd maybe agree with that for the most part, although the fullbacks are not too bad in that regard. Midfield has loads of energy and decent technical ability. Yeah, the team looks pretty steady and stable, really. It's just that it's in a bad moment. I think there'll be a strong outfit next season, let's put it that way. But that's enough of my rambling. So, Martin, what does the data say about their season so far? Can you go into some of the lovely stats for me?
Yes, yes. So, first of all, the open play XG, they sit at 10th with 37.7 XG, with 34 goals scored from that. So they've underperformed overall as a team. They do, however, have some individuals who are performing higher than it. So it's led to some individuals underperforming more than others. Then for the set play XG, they've got the fifth set play XG, so pretty strong in that regard. They create quite a lot of chances from set pieces. And they've got 13.4 XG and they've scored 10 goals from that. So they've not got as many goals as what they should have done from that set play XG. So, but it's still definitely something to be wary of is set plays, and that usually fills Leeds fans full of dread. So, yeah, look out for set play. And then in the other way, going against them, they've got 14th lowest, right, highest even XG against. So, 35.9 XG they've conceded, which is pretty high. That's probably the reason why they've had that drop down the division, because they've been letting in quite a lot of XG in the past sort of 10, 15 games or so. And it's conceded 34 goals from that. So, like you mentioned before, the goalkeeper is keeping them in games on occasion. But even only so much a good goalkeeper can do when they're faced with as much XG as what he's been put against him. And then set play XG against the fifth. So they don't put up too much set play XG against them, which is sort of pretty solid in that regard. 10.4 XG against them from set plays, and they've conceded 13 goals from that one. So that's quite interesting that on the set plays they've conceded more goals than their XG says, but in open play conceded a little bit less. So that's an interesting quirk in the data there. And then regards to the more pressing data, the PPDA, that's passes per defensive action, that stands at 9th with 12.5. That's 12.5 passes allowed per defensive action. So it's decent numbers there, so they show that they can press high when they need to, and their high turnovers doesn't really back that up, so it really shows that they've not really had that much really safe for that high PPDA, 14 for high turnovers with 292. However, quite interestingly, they've got the fifth highest shot ending high turnovers. So although they don't have very many high turnovers, when they do get the highest high turnovers, they are pretty effective because of their dangerous players in the attacking areas. And on top of that, they've got the same amount of goals from high turnovers as what we do. They're definitely the one to watch when it comes to pressing and sealing ball and quickly attacking from them. It may not be something which is in effect in the game against us, but it's something to keep in mind. If they do decide to press, then they can be dangerous doing that as well. But they'll also concede a lot of XG going the other way. So it's one of those risk versus reward things, whether they do decide to go for that.
I think the biggest caveat with all of Sunderland's data is just the amount of variation in terms of managers. I think other teams, you can talk about the data in a little bit more sort of, I guess, definitiveness because of the amount of time that a manager's been there. And it's a bit different now because you've got different styles for Mowbray to Beale to, why is his name just escaped me? The caretaker manager that I have mentioned the name of at least three times already.
Mike Dodds.
Thank you so much. Why did I lose that? Thank you. So they've had a little bit of differences in terms of tactics and setup and all of that. It's not going to help when you're talking about continuity and wanting to really analyze deep into the data. But I still think a lot of that's really interesting. I think the biggest piece of interesting data there is that last one that you go on about. We talked about weaknesses in their team before, and one of the things we actually did forget to say is that they haven't had a proper striker this season. They've had a few different options, Burstow, Rusin. They've had to use sort of strike midfielders as strikers, as you've mentioned in Job. He's not the only one that they've used Dak there as well, and he's been fit. So there's been quite a lot of options that they've had to sort of juggle around. They're not really settled on one, and I hate the term you need a number nine that scores you 15-20 goals in the championship. You don't. You can spread the goals around, and they have. And I think that kind of shows up with that particular stat in particular, because they have a lot of good sort of 1v1 dribblers and direct players in attacking areas, whether that's wide attackers or even midfielders that'll drive with the ball. And that really shows up with the high turnovers ending in shots, because it's players that are winning the ball back when the defense is, the other team's defense is unsettled, and basically driving at them and creating a shot or chance from it. And that really does make a lot of sense, considering the players like Clark and Roberts that they have in the side. But yes, we talked a lot about players. So do you want to have a stab at a predicted lineup? As you mentioned, they have used a 4-2-3-1 for most of the season. However, in the reverse fixture, they did have a back three, and the same against Leicester not too long ago. So we are expecting that, aren't we? Go for it.
Yeah, so we're expecting a back three. So Patterson in goal. I think the back three could be Jensen Seelt, Dan Ballard, Luke O'Nine. And then the wing backs will be Trey Hume on the right. And I'm not sure on the left, it would either be Styles or Leo Hielde. So one toss of those two depends what they want to go for. They may go for the more offensively strong Hielde in this one, I think. Although I do think that whichever winger is against Hielde will have he'll have his hands full, will Hielde, to say the least. But he is, I think, probably a little bit stronger defensively than Styles. Then the midfield part, I think, will be Ekwa, Limbe and Neil. Then up front, I'm going to go with Roberts, Bellingham and Clark. I'm expecting Clark to start this game. But there is obviously some chance that Roberts doesn't play. Like you mentioned, he's not been doing that great for a while now. So he could be brought out for somebody else. We've got players who can play in that sort of area. And like Bradley Dark, although he's more of an attacking midfielder, he could play in those positions if they decide to. But I'd expect them to try to get someone who's got a bit more pace to his game. So they could even use the other guy who they've been using in Jack Clark's stead, Mundell, instead.
Mundell would probably be an interesting one to keep giving games to. He doesn't have a lot of senior experience. I think that at the end of a season, when you are beachy, it's a good time to do it. And I'm not just saying this because I hope they play some young players and they give them a chance, like Seilt in the back three as well that you've mentioned there. Another one who's not played loads and loads this season, but there's another one that needs a little bit more experience and needs some game time. But yeah, I think I agree with you. Styles or Hielde would be an interesting one. They should play Hielde at left centre back, in my opinion. That'd be his best position in this team, but haven't done that all too much. Styles has loads of energy, but has been a really unsuccessful signing, which was a bit of a surprise considering he did quite well for Barnsley. But I think that brings us to the end of this section of the podcast. But before we move on to the Leeds analysis, we're going to go for a quick ad break and a little bit more about our Patreon. Don't worry, patrons, you don't have to hear this bit. Patreon is a media platform where you can support content creators that you enjoy and get extra content in return. Our patrons can get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts. And if you want to pay a little bit more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, such as the one you're listening to right now, analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts, such as a recent running pod that me and Martin did, which I would urge everyone still to go listen to and laugh at how wrong we were. But we have three tiers in total, don't we, Martin, which are...
The first one is the Barada tier, which gets you ad-free podcasts for $1.99. That's just the basic tier that shows a little bit of support to us. The middle tier is the Click tier, which gets you ad-free podcasts and early access to our preview pods, and that's $3.99. And then the best tier is the Pablo tier, of course, which is all the previous benefits, the ad-free podcasts, early access to preview pods, and also all the rest of the stuff that we do in articles, videos, and bonus podcasts, and that's $4.99 per month, and that's the one where you get the most content for your money, really.
Yep, and when we move into the summer, which hopefully is not actually too far away because we don't have to do a playoff campaign, we'll be covering plenty of stuff and we'll be doing some scouting stuff, which is always a really fun time for the likes of me and Martin. We particularly do enjoy that. So if you want to join up, that is patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right, let's get back into the Leeds analysis. Again, I must stress that we are recording this prior to the Coventry game, so things could change. We might pick up injuries during the game. We might not. We might have Grove playing the game. We don't know yet, me and Martin. We haven't seen it. So hopefully he's played, he's fine, and he's playing for, against Sunderland. That's the hope, right, Martin? Because if not, it's going to be as it was from the presser this week from Farker, which was that Nonto and Roberts will be back sometime after the Blackburn game. It's probably going to be. And I think that's about it. I think everyone else, like the Dallases and Strokes of the world, are out for the season, so we don't need to talk about them anymore. That about right?
I think you've covered it.
Lovely. So yes, I will get straight on into the proper questions now, which is, first one, how will we approach the game in possession?
So yeah, it's been interesting in the past few games about the way we've approached games in possession, because we haven't been able to do what we normally do, at least in possession, very well, because of how recent teams have pressed us, and we have struggled under that, and we've had to try to go more direct in response to that, and it hasn't worked too well. But this is going to be a different sort of game, I think. I don't expect them to press us high, especially not at Elland Road. But obviously they are beachy, so who knows? They could decide to stay fit and go for really high press and try to play aggressively at Elland Road, like we've seen recently. So Hull did the same thing at Elland Road, and very, very close to getting a result out of us. So happen, but I would expect it to have more time on the ball, so I would expect us to still continue to do the same things that we've done for all season. Try to build through the third slowly when we've got the ball, and then when we don't have the ball, try to win the ball back and attack quickly at pace when there is space to attack into. So I think it will probably be dictated by the way Sunderland play, but I would expect us to be at our normal wavelength, I think. We think we may have to try to break down Sunderland's mid-block in this game, so we probably will have a bit more of the ball than what we have had in recent games.
Do you expect if they can enact their mid-block as well as they did in the reverse fixture at the stadium, like that it'll be as difficult for us, or do you still think there's kind of an intangible thing with Elland Road and the fact that we are still unbeaten there, we've only got three games left?
Yeah, well, I think it'll be different to the reverse fixture anyway, because this was before Bamford came into the side, wasn't it, when we left Zedden?
Yeah, it was, and that was one of the games that really made us, yeah, I think, do that change, because that was one of the ones we really did struggle.
Exactly, and also since we've brought Bamford into the game, we have been going longer, more often, because we've got Bamford, who does make runs beyond the defence quite often, so we've had more of an out ball and a player who can bring the ball down aerially if we do go more direct in Bamford. So I think it will go differently in this one because of that, and other things like having Firpo inside as well more often than what we did have in the last calendar year. So we've got a lot more things in our squad now, which will give us the tools to be able to try to break down this mid-block which Sunderland will put up against us. So I would expect the game plan to go more according to plan in this one.
I just wanted to ask that because I had the same answer, and I wanted to put some listeners' minds at ease from the reverse fixture a little bit, because, yeah, I think we do have the tools to deal with that situation. And I think even if Bamford didn't start, you know, and it was Joseph, although I think it will be Bamford, you know, he'd do the similar things, if not some to a higher level in terms of stretching in behind. He's got a bit more athleticism. So, yeah, I agree. I think we should be okay at dealing with it this time, much better than last. But even if they have a bit more of the ball than maybe some Leeds fans are expecting, I'm hopeful that we can, you know, still put our own imprint on the game as we did against Hull, for example. Yes, how do you expect us to approach this game out of possession?
So that's another been quite an interesting thing recently, which current circumstances with how many games we've been playing, I think have maybe dictated that we are a little bit less aggressive off the ball. Obviously, there'll be not much of a gap between the weekend's game and this one, just 3 days in between. So it's going to be interesting to see how we do approach this game. I would expect us to at least try to press them in moments. They are a team who can be pressed and can be got at. Blackburn were quite aggressive in their press at times. That settled off a bit after they went ahead, and then Game State took over that game for them. But I wouldn't expect us to beat, at least in the opening parts of the game, try to press them aggressively. And then if we do get a lead, I would expect us to maybe sit back a little bit more, because that game plan works for Blackburn to perfection. They scored a goal, I think, around 20 minutes, then they scored another one about 6-7 minutes later, and then another one not long after that. So yeah, so it went very badly for Sunderland in that game. So if we can try to replicate that game plan, causing problems early on with some aggressive pressing and sit back to try to conserve some energy, that I think that could be the best game plan for this game.
Yeah, and I for one really do hope it goes like that Blackburn game. But yeah, I guess the next question is, as we always ask, is there a player who we can see having a big impact on the outcome of this game from a Leeds perspective? I'll go with the positives first. Players that you think are going to impact this game in a positive way, please, Martin.
I'm going to go with Crescencio Somerville. At the moment, he's the man, and I expect him to have another good game this weekend. And yeah, he will definitely have a good time in this game, I think. Although I have mentioned earlier that Trey Hume is a player that I like, I'm not sure if he quite has the pace to deal with Somerville when he is in full flow and got a bit of space behind him. Questions are Trey Hume likes to get forward as well when Sunderland are in possession. So that could be an area which could be very effective for us. But then equally so, if it will be Dan James who plays on the other flank, I would expect. And whether it is Tom Styles or if it is Leo Hialde, either of those two would have problems with Dan James if we can get him in space behind them and get him running behind them rather than doing that thing where he goes in fields. I'd rather see him wide and get him balled into the box for Bamford and Routier and Somerville to get onto. So that's what I want to see in this game is Dan sticking wide and trying to be effective in that wide space.
Yeah, one of the areas that they can be concerned about if they get caught in transition in particular probably is those wide centre-backs as well, not just the wing-backs. If you're talking about Hume and Styles or Hjelder, if they are caught out and we can get a winger, you know, bearing down on a outside centre-back when we've already discussed their lack of athleticism, that would be really good for us. I think the wingers for us, very, very key. I've actually said to you recently about the game against Coventry, and I'm going to say it for this one as well, I would really have liked Willy Nonto. It's not that I don't think Dan James is a good player and I don't think he can be effective still. Of course he can. But in terms of one versus one, trying to beat a player, I would prefer Nonto. It's just James has that raw speed, which I guess, like I say, in transition will really, really aid him. But it does feel like, from both sides' perspective, that fullbacks and wingbacks are going to have a big outcome, a big sort of, what do you call it, bearing on the outcome of this game. That's what I'm trying to say. In the likes of Hume, as you mentioned, and then the other one on the other side. But even for us, they're going to come up against some of their bigger threats and decent amount of speed, whether that's Clark, Roberts, or Mundell. So plenty to think about in that regard. And if Firpo himself is caught upfield, our rest defence has been really, really good this season. But, you know, there's always that moment where they might get away. And I don't really want Clark running at anyone in particular. Same if our right back, which I'm assuming will be Gray or Byram, depending on if Groove comes back into the team, and if what they do and what Clark can do against them, because he is just an incredibly difficult man to deal with, although he will be sort of pushing up onto Roden's side, and I prefer that slightly because Roden will just come out and be really aggressive against him. I think that will work actually at times. I think if he, you know, he trusts in his pace and his body, then I think he can match Clark in that regard. And yeah, the other area for me that I'm a little bit concerned about from the sort of negative perspective is what they can do in midfield. And this is where I want to talk about Grev a little bit. I think he is so key at anchoring the team and making the team tick. But they do have two really good midfielders out of possession, and when they want to be, at least, because you've got Equa's physicality and athleticism and power, I guess. And then you've got Neil, who's a very intelligent, busy player in that regard. So I'm quite concerned at how that could go if we don't get it right, or if, you know, we have to play Kamara and Gray again. And again, it's a lot of minutes for them because they played a lot recently. So that's a bit of a concern, just from a pure sort of energy and intensity levels perspective, as well as the fact that I think Grove's profile is really, really needed in there, so to sort of control things and keep things ticking over. So yeah, I'm a little concerned about that. Is there anything, your other areas of the team that you're concerned about for us?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it rests on Groove being available, because if Groove isn't available, then we have to put Gray in midfield, which means we're taking Gray away from right back. I think he's probably the best one to deal with Jack Clark. In the previous fixture, although he got off to a bad start against Clark, he ended very strong. The first half,
did grow into the game. Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Clark was very effective in the first half, and then in the second half, he didn't really do anything because Gray had a handle on him. And so he got that yellow card in halfway through the first half, but then he sort of got his bearing and did a lot better with me against him. So I think he'll remember that game, and he'll be rewatching footage of that game where he did well, where he didn't do well. So this is always helpful when you've got these reverse fixtures where we can look back at them and see how he did well, what threats they pose. So I really want Ray to be able to be at right back in this game. I think that will help us a lot, because if we can keep a handle on Clark, that will do a lot for our chances, in my opinion.
Yep, I agree. And let's be honest, I think it's quite likely, and this brings us on nicely to the next question. I think it's quite likely Grove's fine, touch wood, if he's not for Coventry. It sounded like it was swelling that was very nearly at the point of being reduced enough to think, oh yeah, he'll be fine. Obviously, it could flare up against Coventry if he plays, but hopefully that's not the case. And either he's rested against Coventry or it's healed enough that he can play both games. So that's the hope for me. But either way, I'm expecting he should be involved. I've probably jinxed this now. But do you want to have a stab at a predicted lineup for us with that potentially in mind? I hope you agree with me that he's going to be fine.
Yeah, I do agree. I think he probably will be fine for this game. If he does play in Coventry, I would expect him to also be okay for this game, unless obviously he picks up something in during the game. Fingers crossed he doesn't. So I'll go with Melier in goal, Ray at right back, Rodden and Ampadu at centre back. We'll go for Thurpo at left back, then Kamara and Grev in midfield. Then third forward, maybe Dan James on the right. It will be Routere in midfield, attacking midfield, and Somerville on left, and Bamford up front, with an outside chance of Joseph getting his first start. I think if he was going to get his first start, it probably would be in this game. I think.
Yeah.
I don't expect him to start against Coventry. That's probably one of our toughest games that's left. And I'd say Sunderland, although it isn't the weakest game we've got left, it's also weaker than the other one. So if Joseph does come off the bench against Coventry and does well, he's definitely making a case for himself to get a start before the end of the season. And I think he could cause a lot of problems for Sunderland's back line. I think he has the edge on them physically, and both strength-wise and pace. And it's just, his movement is fantastic, so he would cause a lot of problems for them. So that's outside chance for it. I still expect Bamford to start, but there's a chance of it.
I'm in total agreement. Yeah, obviously we're predicting a few things there that could happen. Bamford got through a lot of workload recently, so there's always a chance that you might need a small rest. That's potentially possible. But then, among other things, yeah, if Joseph comes off the bench and proves his point again, impresses again, then he'll be in contention to start, I would imagine, against Sunderland in some sort of capacity. Whether that's only for a half or 60 minutes, who knows, but he definitely could, for all the reasons you said. Definitely one of the ones you can probably try out against more than the Coventry one. I think Bamford has to start that, which listeners will already know what happened in that game, but yes. And the only other thing I wanted to ask or kind of mention is Grev, and like, if he is not available, is there really any chance that Liam Cooper comes into the team? I'm not asking for all that to happen, to be very clear. I don't think it should happen. I think he did struggle against Watford among three or four that really did struggle that day. He was definitely up there. And I think in certain games, he's probably fine to play still. I'm still of that opinion. I think against teams that are less mobile and less athletic, which is not Watford at all, he'd do an absolutely fine job. I think Millwall, he'd have been absolutely okay in that game. If anything, he might have had some upside from set pieces and stuff like that. Potentially against Blackburn, he could be okay as well. But do you think there's any world where Farke will play Cooper, or do you think he will completely stick with the whole team as it was if Grev is not fit?
If Grev isn't fit, I think there is an outside chance that Cooper could play in this. I think on his side of the pitch, he'll be playing at left centre back. There's less athleticism and pace for him to deal with than there is on the right side of the pitch, because it'd be quite unlikely that he'll come up against Jack Clark. Because if Clark gets by Gray or Byron, if he's playing at right back, then Roden will be dealing with him. So I wouldn't expect him to have to come up against him at all. Obviously, there's Patrick Roberts on the other side, but I don't think he's as much of a explosive dribbler as what Jack Clark is, and he's also not in the best form. So I think you really could do it in this game, and then you'd put Ampadu in midfield rather than Gray, and then you could keep Gray at right back, because that's probably what I would prefer if Groove was not available, but I do think he will be.
Yeah, I agree. And like I say, it's not what I'm asking for or even necessarily wanting with Cooper. It was just a question of what could happen, and at no point have I suggested that we think he should start. Yeah, anyway, the last couple of questions now. What do you expect watching this game of football will look like, Martin?
So I expect us to dominate the ball in this game. I think they will sit back in more of mid-block and not be too aggressive, because that will leave themselves open and their pressing can be exposed because of how disjointed it can be and how aggressive and the decision-making of their midfield leaves something to be desired for when they are pushing forward and pressing. And that will leave a lot of space, which Routere could exploit, as an example. So I think they will see that, especially with how the previous fixture went, that we didn't have most of the ball in the previous fixture as well. they did have some spells where they did possess the ball, but they would not want when they were effective. They were effective when they could hit us quickly in transition, get Jack Clark quickly onto the ball. So I would expect us to have both of the ball, and they will try to hit us in transition, get the ball quickly to Clark or to Roberts on the other side, but I'd expect them to lean quite heavily towards their left side and be attacking down that side where Clark is and try to get him either getting the ball into the box or shooting after cutting inside. So, yeah, that's going to be their game plan. Get the ball as quickly as they can to Clark, and our job will be trying to limit how many times that happens.
Yeah, I think their game plan is definitely going to be trying to turn the ball over in sort of midfield areas as much as possible to free Clark up and have him exploding as he does down the left. And I guess that's partly why maybe they've been playing Hjelder there, because he gives a bit more defensive protection. But he is obviously their main threat. If they can get him into the game and into the team, we don't know if he started against Bristol City, but we're imagining that he will and that he'll come back from the start against us as well, and he could have a big bearing on this game. But hopefully we find a way to score first, because that is always one of the key things for us, isn't it? So where will the game be won or lost, just on that note?
I do think the game will be won or lost by how well we can keep hold of the ball. I think that's what it's going to be, and that we don't give them too many times to transition on us. Because if we do give them more of those opportunities, no matter how good our rest defence is, Jack Clark will find a way through it, because he is that good of a player. And no matter how good Archie Gray is, he will be beaten by Clark, because he is good. Very, very good. So we just need to limit those chances where Clark can be effective and try to break down their mid-block and be patient with it as well. We don't want to force it too often. I think in the recent fixtures we have been going long too often. But I do still want us to try to go long on occasion when the ball is there to be long into either Dan James on the right or through the middle to Bamford or Routere if he joins Bamford in the making runs forward. So yeah, that's it for me, is how well we manage at the transitions.
Had the same in my notes. How good our rest defence is at dealing with them in transition, and where can our match winners come from is the other question I was going to ask. I agree about what you said about patience and trying to break them down, but can Somerville or Routere come out with a big moment? Can we even hit them in transition in our own way as well? That would be a big one for me. It's another one of those games where it does feel like you score first, the opposition might capitulate. And I feel like that's probably more true for the Beachy teams than other teams in the league that really have something to fight for, whether that's at the bottom or top of the table. So hopefully they concede early and capitulate and we get a nice, comfortable, easy win. But if Clark scores in transition and they can, you know, keep themselves really stodgy in the middle and make things really difficult and compact, could be a long game for us. So hopefully that's not the case. But yeah, hopefully we find a way. I'm not going to predict the score. We don't do that on this podcast. I'm not going to ask Martin to either. But I do think that brings us to the end of this podcast. That brings us very nicely to finish off on, I absolutely love Jack Clark and I wanted to say that. I think he's brilliant and good luck to wherever he ends up. Just have a really bad game against us, please, mate. Score an own goal and that would be lovely. Anyway, just a quick reminder, the website for our Patreon is, Martin?
patreon.com/ASAW, Patreon.
Lovely, and we'll be back with a review of this game and a preview of the weekend fixture against Blackburn, as well as a review of the Coventry and Sunderland games very soon. We've got a really busy week, and then it's going to calm down. And just to finish off as well, I just wanted to say thank you very much to Sky. We had a nice plan, and Martin and Toldo had basically said on the last pod it looked like things were calming down, and then suddenly we get, you know, Middlesbrough was moved a while ago to Monday, but we've moved QPR now to Friday, so that's great. That means that's another fun week of lots of podcasts for us, but I'm sure the listeners are very much looking forward to it. And all that's left for me to say is thank you very much to Martin.
Thank you as well, Adam.
Thank you to our dear listeners. Goodbye. Enjoy the games.